Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning to each and every one of you. 10:04, almost 10:05, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about your car repair dilemmas. We can talk about symptoms, and I think that usually works the best if we start off, if you have a particular problem, you start off with like year, make, and model and the miles, and then the symptoms. It's not very productive to talk about all the things that you've tried to fix it because it didn't fix it. So symptoms are really the most important aspect of car repair, and that's the person standing on the other side of the counter, the most difficult customer to provide service, correct service to, is where they, and it's usually men, walk in and dance the keys across the counter and say it's got a bad noise and walk away, or the air conditioning doesn't work, or it doesn't start, because there's so many questions after that that will save you money on the diagnostic time if you just spend a few minutes at the front counter. Now, on the other hand, if the service writer doesn't ask you those kinds of questions, then that's a bad sign too. I'll give you a good example. One example is somebody comes in and says, my car won't start. That sounds simple enough, right? No, it doesn't. There's a lot of things that can prevent it from starting. For instance, it cranks over fine, but it doesn't catch. That's a no-start condition, but that's fuel or spark. It has nothing to do with the battery or the alternator or the starter. On the other hand, it clicks but does nothing else. That's very beneficial, because now we know we do have a battery alternator starter problem. Or nothing happens. It sounds like it's dead. Again, starter, alternator, battery, bad connections, stuff like that. So those are the kinds of things that we really concern ourselves with, is related to specific symptoms that the customer can give us. It's also very difficult, as you can well imagine, when the wife relays the information to the customer or to her husband, and her husband relays it to us, and of course he can't answer any questions because he just got it from his wife. And in that case, it's pretty easy to just send an email to the shop, or simply have the wife or the husband who's experiencing the symptoms write down something and hand it to their spouse and say, here, give them this. And by the way, here's my cell phone number, so call me if you have questions. You won't believe either that probably 35% of the symptoms can be diagnosed really close at the counter. A lady came in the other day and she says, my car shakes. So the service writer said, tell me where it shakes. Does it shake the steering wheel or the seat of your pants? No, just the steering wheel. Does the steering wheel go left and right? Yes. Is it when you're leaving a traffic light or approaching the traffic light? No, only approaching the traffic light. Okay, we're kind of done. It's a brake wobble. The front rotors are probably warped. And when she takes off, we're not climbing on the brakes, so there is no vibration. When she comes to a stop, we're shaking the front end. And so then you follow up, well, I bet when you get on the freeway and you have to slow down, when you apply the brakes, does it shake too? Yes, it does. Okay, we're 50% there already. So we have to just look at the front brake rotors and the front brakes and make sure the rears are in adjustment, stuff like that. So that's the kind of help that you can give us. And I tell you that because it'll save you money. And not because we're going to make more money. It's because it's going to save you money on the diagnostic process. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. They have some really good technicians, great technicians. They provide really good service. They get the job done their first time, as long as you send them in the right direction, of course. They're diehard diesel service and repair and parts guys. They work on both foreign and domestic light-duty diesels. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix. They're open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. So you can get more information on my best car repair shops list under diesel at marksalem.com. Strictly Diesel, a good place to go. Like I said, knows those Chevy, Dodges, and Fords, light-duty and 3/4 ton and 1 ton and smaller, really, really well if you live in that part of the country. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we've already got one caller, so that means there's four lines open. Who am I talking to?
This is Bruce.
Bruce, good morning.
I am calling about the same problem that you just described with brakes.
Okay.
There's extensive brake chatter on the 2009 Chevy 6.6 liter, and I would love to know who makes the best rotors and brake pads for it.
Okay, it's really not a matter of the best. Here's what almost always happens. We have two brakes, and the front brakes take care of 60% of your braking, and the back brakes take care of 40% of your braking. And probably half the time, we entertain what we call a brake pulsation on a stop. We find the rear brakes are completely out of adjustment. Now, in your 2009, you might have drum. And, of course, drum brakes will self-adjust when you back up and kind of firmly hit the brakes. A lot of people don't do that. So the brakes fall out of adjustment, which means we overload the fronts. So now the fronts are doing 80 or 90% of the braking, and they don't like that. So they get hot, the rotors warp. So the repair is not to go buy a more expensive drum or rotor and pads. The repair is get those doggone rear brakes to do their job. So you pull the hubs, you wash everything down with water, you adjust up, make sure the adjusters are free, make sure the self-adjusters are working, and then you bring the shoes out until they match the diameter, the inside diameter of your drum, and we have big calipers to do that kind of fancy stuff. Then we slide the brakes back in, and then the first thing the customer does, if we talk to them after they get in their car, they're going to go, oh, the brakes pedal's a lot higher. Well, that's true, because the rear drums affect the brake pedal. So all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I got more brakes. So most of the time, now disc brakes in the rear are different, but you said, I thought you said it was a 2009. Is that what you said?
It's a 3/4 ton.
Okay.
6.6 liter.
All right. So it's got the Duramax in it. So it's a GM product?
Yes.
Okay.
But it is four-wheel disc.
Okay. So if it's four-wheel disc, do you ever use the parking brake? And don't you lie to me.
Do I ever use what?
Parking brake?
Never.
Okay. Oftentimes, that's how we adjust the rear brakes. So sometimes we'll just pull the lever and we'll get inside and we'll just pump that brake, that parking brake pedal 20 or 30 times, depending on the stature and the strength of the technician. And we'll just bring that piston out. And what it does is it kind of ratchets the piston out and it takes up some of the slack in the rear. So I would say to you, first, go out there, start the truck up, turn on the air conditioning, and put it in drive, and just pump the parking brake. And I think with drive, the brake will release each time. But if not, then put it back in park and pull your lever and hold it, and just pump the brake pedal 20 or 30 times. Now, don't have your brake on when you're pumping your brake pedal. So with your right foot, don't be hitting the brake, and then with your left foot pumping the pedal. We need the brakes in a neutral position. And I'm betting that 50% of the time you're going to find that the pedal... Now, you won't know the pedal's up higher then, so you get out of the truck, you go inside, watch football, whatever you're going to do. Then next time you come out and you stop it, you go, oh, okay, now I feel it. So the big major brands are Bendix, Wagner, Raybestos. Those are the three big dogs in my world. And those are certainly brake pads that we sell a lot of, rotors that we sell a lot of. But it's really important to know that... Probably, of all the brake rotors out there, there might be three or four vendors, and they put them in different boxes. So it's the same brake rotor, but it's just in a bunch of different boxes. There's nobody out there. 89% of the batteries sold in the United States are sold from Johnson Controls in the Midwest East. And they have bowling alley kind of things, and you have the same battery, let's call it a 78 series, a 78 series battery coming down these tilted bowling alley things, and they all have a different label on them. And it's quite a sight to see, but in our industry that happens a lot. So if you want somebody to check your brakes out, I think that they will probably get the rears in adjustment. If they find any problems of abnormal wear, that would be a concern. And abnormal wear, if you do your own work, Bruce, abnormal wear is the uneven wearing of the inner and the outer pad. Now, I'm talking significant uneven wear. I'm not talking about somebody pulling out a micrometer and saying that there's 10 thousandths difference between, you know, the front and the rear, or the inner and the outer pad. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about obvious visual wear. And an inboard pad wear means something, and an outboard pad wear, aggressive wear, means something else. So you have to know all those different factors. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you for calling in. And brakes are a challenge, all of us. And we also have brake squealing problems, and that's where the pad is vibrating like a guitar string. And that can be caused by a whole bunch of things. But predominantly, it is my opinion that it's caused, and the people that experience brake chatter are typically people that just gently come to a stop. So the guys that drive and hit the brake about 2.5 eye blinks away from the traffic light, they're not going to experience a lot of squealing. The women that are always in a hurry and typically climb on the brakes pretty hard at a traffic light, they're not typically going to experience squealing. It's just the people that are gentle with their brakes, and that seems to be the common denominator. So I'm going to tell you a real quick story before I take a break. A friend of mine calls me. Now, folks, I got to tell you something. The most coveted thing I own is my cell phone number. So I've known this guy for 30 years, so he has my cell phone. He calls me and he says, Mark, he says, it's Friday night. I go to pick up my car, and I told him to leave it outside, leave the keys under the mat, and lock it up. He says, but I can't get in it. And I said, well, why can't you get in it? And he goes, well, I just can't. I said, well, are you using your other keys? And he goes, no. And I said, well, you told us to lock up the car and put the keys on the mat. And he goes, yeah, but I can't get to the keys on the mat because the car's locked. I said, okay, well, let me call my son and find out what happened. So I called my son, Alan, and I said, hey, do you remember Bill's car? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, did you guys leave it outside? Yes, we did. And I said, what kind of special instructions? This is a work order. He goes, I know exactly what it is, Dad. He goes, he told us to lock it, put the keys underneath the mat and lock it outside. I said, well, he can't get in. And he goes, well, doesn't he have a second set of keys? And I said, no, he doesn't. And he goes, Dad, people that tell, and I already know this, people that tell us to lock the keys in the car are going to show up with their second set of keys, or they're going to show up with their wife with their set of keys to the same car. I said, I know, son, but most of my friends have significant head injuries because we've either been beat up or we've fallen off motorcycles or kicked in the head by a horse. So you have to give my friends a little extra. And he goes, okay. He says, I'll go down there and unlock it for him. And he has a friend of his that's a locksmith. So they met and unlocked it, and Bill got his car. So just I want to warn you that in the event you tell your garage to park it outside and lock the keys inside of it, you probably ought to have a second set of keys. And Bill didn't, and his wife told him that they never had a second set of keys. So anyway, I'm not going to tell you his last name, but it starts with an S. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. If you'd like to join the conversation, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're talking about car repair, car problems, car diagnostics. I've got a chatter. I've got a noise. The shop told me this. The shop told me that. Should I get this kind of tire or that kind of tire, and tell me which oil's for my car? All those questions we can probably handle to your satisfaction. 602-508-0960. This portion of our show, Under the Hood, is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, he has a full-service, family-owned and operated auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. I've known Tom since the late 70s, early 80s. So no matter what kind of work you need, whether it's just basic maintenance or some diagnostic stuff, or it's an oil change or rotate your tires, it really makes no difference. Tom and his ASE Master technicians are capable of identifying any problem or just simply performing the maintenance right that you need for your car. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. So we're going to move on and talk about snake oil. Snake oil, there's so many products out there on the market. And they're on television at late night, and they talk about all the stuff that they do and all the stuff that they're going to do for your car. But the bottom line typically is that if you use this product, it's going to save you money in the long run because you're not going to have to flush your fuel injectors. You're not going to have to do this or not going to have to do that. It's going to make your motor love you and make your motor last longer. And, folks, there's just nothing that's any – there's no truth to any of that whatsoever. First of all, your motor doesn't have a heart, and it doesn't have a brain. It might have a computer that runs spark and fuel and timing, but it certainly doesn't have a brain that knows that you love it or that you put something in the oil that loves it or if you use special spark plugs that have three sparks instead of two. All of that stuff has been proven time and time again to be stuff that simply takes money out of your pocket and puts it into theirs. I can't tell you how many times we've tested those products and found out that sometimes, not always, there's a detrimental effect to you using the products. So even with respect to aftermarket air filters and aftermarket spark plugs and stuff like that, it's important to just pay attention to what the promises are when it comes to adding stuff to your car. It's also important to know that your oil that lubricates your engine is a very specific blend of components. Ladies that make frosting for cakes, you understand too much of one product or the other. Too much of frosting mix or too much of water or too much of this or too much of that is going to mess it up. And it has to do with a lot of cooking. Too much of some product messes it up. So spaghetti is just perfect the way grandma made it, but too much of garlic or too much noodles or cooking the noodles too long or too short, that all has to do with the success of the end result. So when you put oil additives in your oil, it throws the oils out of specification because that oil is going to be loaded up with zinc or it's going to be loaded up with a viscosity improver or some kind of pour point additive or oxidation additive or extra detergent. So it's going to throw it out of spec. So the oil that you've got is going to be contaminated by the 3-ounce bottle that you bought for $12.95. So it's not really a good idea to do that. Nevertheless, you're welcome to do with whatever you want with your cars. But I'll tell you another real waste of money is gasoline additives. Holy mackerel. Many of you don't remember when I don't remember what it was called. Gil, do you remember what? Oh, a Teflon. When Teflon first came out in the 70s, and it was called TMI. And I think it was called TMI. I could be wrong. You'll correct me. 602-508-0960. But this Teflon came in, and it was in an oil. And if you just put 4 quarts of oil in of your regular oil and then put one of this, I think it was TMI, then your car would love you and last forever. Well, in testing, what we found was that the filters in your car are usually going to hold somewhere in the vicinity of 8 to 10 microns. So it's going to capture very, very small things. And a micron is a thousandth of an inch. 1/1000th of an inch. So that's kind of an important thing. If you think about, you know, the thickness of your hair and stacking it up and making an inch worth of hair, it's a pretty small thing. Well, we found that there was Teflon in the oil. We didn't know what kind of oil it was. It could have been 30 weight, a 10, 30, a 20, 50. It could have been a 20 weight. It could have been a 10 weight. We don't know. We don't care. But we found that all the Teflon that was in the quart ended up in the filter. So there was really no benefit whatsoever. It was a marketing strategy that just, like I said, takes your money and puts it in their pocket, and you get nothing for it. So there's lots of snake oil out there. If it was that good, your garage would be selling it and using it. And you would have proof that Mark puts it in his wife's car and here's the scientific analysis and the results of why I'm doing that. And I can assure you, there's not a car in my fleet that has any snake oil in the gas tank or in the brake fluid or in the engine or in the radiator, none of that. It has just unadulterated coolant and oil and filters and stuff like that. Okay, we've got a caller. Who would that be?
That would be Bill.
Bill, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. I need your opinion. I have a 2000 Chevy Silverado tool drive half ton that I'm the original owner of. 225,000 miles on it. Truck still runs great. Looks good inside and out. I'm close to retirement, and I cannot wrap my brain around a $500 a month truck payment. My idea is it worth to put a new motor, new tranny, and have the rear end done on that truck? Get another 20 years out of it.
2 minutes.
I'll take the $500 a month and I'll take care of 100% of your maintenance. I'll do everything. I'll do the motor when it's ready. I'm teasing you now. I'll do the motor. Mm-hmm. I'll do the transmission. I'll do the engine. I'll do the differential. I'll even take the tires. I'll take the brakes. You'll never spend another dime if you take my deal at $500 a month. And I'm teasing you, but I'm driving home a point. If you have to put a motor, first of all, you've driven this car for 18 years, yes?
Yes.
Take all your maintenance plus you paid for it and divide it by 18 years. I'm going to do this because I have to have a calculator. 18 times 12. So we got 216 months that you've owned it so far. Correct me if I'm wrong. Times, let's just say, $30. So you don't have a whole lot of money tied up in this truck with respect to just what you're doing. So I'm going to do that again. 18 times 12 equals 216 times $30 equals $6,480. So you haven't spent, if we average $30 a month, you haven't spent more than $6,500. The answer to your question is every time you buy a big dog item like you're talking about, here's the issue. The issue is how long will it take me to put that, to get that back in usage? So the differential is not going to fail, so let's wipe that one off. The transmission fails, let's say it's a $4,000 transmission. Well, if it's worth $50 a month, then you're not going to drive it very far and for so many months, and it's going to owe you nothing. So it's a real easy transition to make that, but if you'll stay right here, I'm up against a break, and when I come back, I'll have more examples for you. But to answer your question, the sales tax and license of a new vehicle will pay for the engine and the transmission in your old vehicle. So those are non-recoverable things. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us on our car show, Under the Hood, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me finish up with Bill. Bill, I've done some math behind the scenes, and I prefer to look at it from a point of, is if you have to put a $5,000 transmission in that, then if that transmission, have you put a transmission in it yet?
No, I've never had a major issue with the truck.
Okay.
At all.
You're way past due on the transmission. So if you had to put $5,000 in it, that would cover the sales tax on your new truck. So that's a non-recoverable dollar. And so that trades. Now, when we do an engine, the engine's the beginning of the end of the engine is when it starts leaking oil because of internal pressure, or it starts consuming oil where you're laying down a blue smoke screen. It'll also idle rough. And no one can fix it because one of the spark plugs is fouled with oil. That creates the internal pressure. That creates the oil consumption. That's the beginning of the end. Until you have any of those symptoms, you're home free. That motor can go 400,000 miles as long as you don't run it low on oil and you don't overheat it. Those are the two main reasons my shop replaces engines. I don't care what kind of car you got. 95% of the engines that come in that are toast have been run low on oil, have been overheated severely. And it's, in my opinion, it's kind of that idea that it's Friday afternoon or it's Wednesday afternoon, I'm on my way to work or I'm on my way home, and the car starts getting needles tickling the red, but I'm only 3 or 4 miles from home and I know I can make it. That's the one right there that we hear all the time. So it's up to you, but I think that if you were to put, heck, $100 a month in the bank, I think that would cover all your maintenance from this point forward, guaranteed if you put $200 a month in the bank. So there's lots of possibilities, but I think I was thinking to myself, $200 a month would be $2,500 a year. That would be half of a transmission. That would be a water pump. That would be all, I mean, individually now, that would be all the belts, all the hoses, a major tune-up, maybe some oil leaking, some rear main seals, some gaskets, all that kind of stuff. I just think, with the exception of the big ones, now, air conditioning is another big one. Air conditioning can be $1,200, $1,500, $1,800. But on a quarter of a million mile truck, if the air conditioning compressor goes bad, we might find the evaporator plugged or the condenser plugged, or we might find significant leaks throughout the hoses. So we may need to do some more work to give you another 200,000 miles. So it's not likely that the refrigeration hoses on the low side and the high side on your air conditioning of your truck are going to last a half a million miles. So those are the kinds of things. But on the other hand, if you want to treat yourself to a new truck, And if you want to keep the truck, then, or if you don't have a love for the truck and you have the wherewithal to buy another truck, then go ahead. You also said that was a 6.6, right?
No, 5.3.
5.3, okay. The only thing on a 5.3 is every once in a while we'll run across some bad camshafts, and then it'll manifest to a miss, and then the diagnosis will show that we wore a lobe off of it. But I don't think your 2000 is in the category I speak of. I think you're 7, 8, 9, and maybe 10 years away from the 5.3s that we're seeing that in. And I think after a quarter million miles, if we had a camshaft that was going to go bad, it would have gone bad by now. So those are my thoughts. I know that buying a truck is kind of special and it's a lot of fun, and if that's what you want to do, I would be the last person to say no. Of course, you need to square it with your wife, and she may have more of a vote than I do.
2 minutes.
All righty.
Well, I appreciate it. Wife is not a problem, and I appreciate your advice, and when something major goes, I'll come see you. For the time being, I'll just sort of keep driving it and maintaining it.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Not too long ago, somebody sent me an email, and they said, you know, nobody can fix my air conditioning. And so I said, okay, well, give me your phone number because I want to call you. And when I call you, I'm calling from a blocked line for obvious reasons. So I called the gentleman up, and we talked about his air conditioning. And he says, you know, they've put two compressors on it, and they've done this, and they've done that. And I said, okay, well, I want to talk more about the symptoms. And here's what the end result was this. This was never a cold air issue. This was a volume of air issue. There was times when the air conditioning just quit working. And after digging into his head bone, he said, oh, well, you can kind of put your hand up to the vent and the air is cold, but there's, you know, it won't blow out a match. Well, this is a blower motor problem. The blower motor's going away. Well, does it happen in first, second, third, and fourth speed of the fan? Yes, it does on all four. Okay, first, second, and third is tied directly to a resistor. So if you lose one, two, or three, then you replace the blower motor resistor. But in fourth gear, the high speed, the maximum setting, that fourth gear is just direct battery to the blower motor. So we're not going to reduce the speed and the RPM. So he says that he loses it in all four. He said, I can be in four and lose it, and one and lose it, two and lose it, three and lose it. So he has a blower motor issue, and we've already spent thousands of dollars in both initial customer pay as well as warranty paperwork, because we just had a disconnect in the communication. It's always blown cold air. It quits blowing cold air out of the vents, and nobody's been able to get that out of him, at least up to this point. And I'm not the soothsayer of car repair. I just understand that the give and take at the front counter is very important for my guys to be able to fix your car correctly. I would be thoroughly embarrassed if we diagnosed it as an air conditioning compressor and you said that didn't fix it, and we put another compressor in it and you said that didn't fix it. I would certainly be really, really mad, and my panties would be wadded up kind of tight if nobody asked you to take a ride with you, for you to show it to them and talk to you about the volume of air and the temperature of the air. Because an air conditioning compressor causes, the air volume is the same, but it goes from very nice cold to very hot. And that could be low Freon. That could be a whole lot of things other than a compressor. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call. Bulletin, bulletin, bulletin. There is an oil additive. It doesn't cost much. It's probably $20 or $30. It comes in a syringe. You squirt it into your engine oil, and listen to this. This is amazing. It actively fills in worn spots inside of your engine where two pieces of metal rub together. And as they wear, this stuff knows where to go. It knows to where to go to fill in those worn spots, to make them flat instead of a little bit concave. It's like applying a finish to a wood table. It fills in the chips and the scratches. The magic is how it only fills in spot where friction is tired. Where highest, never worry about clogging up oil filters, ports, or lifters. It was developed by a grant from NASA, the United States National Science Foundation, and the United States Department of Energy. It was them guys. And it reduces friction by more than 10% over your oil alone, which means that Mobil and Shell and Phillips 66 and Chevron, all the big dogs, they can't figure this out. It increases fuel economy by 6 to 8%. It reduces engine noise by in the first 15 minutes of driving. And it'll fill up worn material up to 40 microns or 16 thousandths of an inch. That's about 5 or 6 hairs stacked on top of one another. So I'm telling you what, if this isn't the neatest thing in the world, sign up right here, get our scientific reports, use it, and it's easier to install that than replacing your razor blades. Just take your oil cap off, squirt this stuff in there, and you're home free. I'm telling you, this kind of stuff, and the only thing I don't see here is I wish I could see what the price is, because that would be a whole lot more fun. But, of course, you can imagine, it's $109 for 9 ounces. $109. And 151 reviews, people gave it a 4.5-star rating. Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. So, if you want to be a fool like the rest of those people, or the family of the company that owns it, for all those perfect reviews, then go ahead and spend $109, and you might as well just take that money and pour it down the drain, because nothing's going to fill the worn spots in your engine. I promise you that. Bill, good morning to you. What's on your mind?
Hey, Doug, Mark. I just got in on the tail end of your refrigeration last call. I had a similar problem. From what I heard, his motor wasn't going high on number 4.
Uh-huh.
Mine suddenly did that. I'm doing fine on the other 1, 2, 3. 4 just quit on me. But I blow cold air all the time. The fact that it'll run your butt out of the cab. But I just come back off of a road trip, and I forgot from the last road trip, every time I get out there, I go for like an hour, and all of a sudden the air is less, and less, and down to damn near nothing. And when I stop, it thaws out. Something's freezing up, and it thaws out, and I'm back to square one. Now,
okay.
Someone told me.
No. I don't care what somebody told you. It's time for me to ask questions.
Okay.
All right. So you're driving down the road, and you say that before the first negative thing happens, what speed are you in on your blower? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
It makes no difference.
Okay. So the blower slowly. Now, it does make a difference to me. So if you're on the highway, are you on 1 or 2 by chance?
Well, I do have to go down because it gets so cold. My wife raises crap because it's so cold.
Okay, then it is.
It works really well.
Okay, then it is freezing up the evaporator. It is.
Yeah, I tried it on purpose this time just to see if I could keep it from freezing up if I started out on 1 or 2, but it didn't work.
Okay.
It still freezes up.
Well, if it freezes up, then when you park it and go into the restaurant that you're going to go have lunch at, as you come back out, there'll be a big spot of water underneath your truck,
right?
Because the ice melts. So,
exactly.
You got two choices. You keep it up on 3 or 4, and have your wife roll down her window until she's comfortable. That's plan A. Plan B. Right, she rides in the back of the truck. And plan C is you get a new wife. So those are the three options you have, because I can't fix. And you have a problem that all the rest of us have too. And so my wife is just like your wife. She doesn't like the temperature I pick. And don't
never
you.
Never right. Never right.
And don't you tell her about Mark saying A, B, and C.
Yeah, their thermostat is completely different than mine.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mark, someone told me that I had a leak in my low pressure side, and that's what's caused it to freeze up.
Okay.
Is that possible?
No. No, think about it. We're making ice with your air conditioning unit.
Right.
If it's freezing up and the volume drops down and you can't control the volume by raising the fan speed any, and you get the big puddle of water when you go inside the grocery store or whatever and you come back out, we're making ice. So this person's suggesting that the low side, well, actually, when you're low on Freon or leak, if you have a leak, it's going to affect the high and the low side. So there is no such thing as a low side leak. There could be a leak in the low side, but it's going to affect the high side too. But if that's the case, then through attrition, the Freon level will go lower and lower and lower. And then the low pressure switch, when it sees a pressure it doesn't like, it shuts off the air conditioning compressor because it doesn't want to damage the compressor. And so at that particular point, point you go from whatever you were, lukewarm, to just real hot. And you haven't said a word about that. You have never about that it quit blowing cold.
Well, it does. Well, it's not. It's really not cold because when it's blowing so low, there's no. It's not cold.
Okay.
It's barely moving. I don't know if it blew a match out.
Okay. Well, that's the volume of air. It's still whatever air comes out of the vents when it's got a volume of what we call a whisper. It's still cold air. It's just not a volume of cold air. It's like the fan speed is on zero or 0.1,
right,
and the fan speed's coasting along. But if you have a leak, then how are you building ice every time you get in a truck?
Well, that was my question, Mark.
Okay. It doesn't happen.
But my four did quit. My high did quit on me.
Okay. Now, is this a Ford we're talking about?
Oh, hell no. I wouldn't even own a Ford.
All right, but don't get me in trouble. Don't get me in trouble, buddy.
It's an O2 GMC diesel 6.6.
Okay. All right, here's the deal. Most of the time, that when the blower motor goes bad, it starts drawing heavy amps, and it goes straight to the switch. And on the other side of the switch is battery power. The switch goes to high, and it sends 12 volts straight to the blower motor. When the blower motor goes bad, it takes the switch out because the excessive electricity amperage it's drawing from the fuse panel goes through the switch. So I'll bet if you play with that switch kind of hard and you wiggle it left and right and up and down, I'll bet you can get high to work every once in a while. So if in fact I'm right, then you need to replace the blower switch and the fan motor, and you're back in tall cotton.
Okay. Hey, also, is it unusual? I got 321,000 miles on my truck, and I'm still on the original brakes. Is this unusual?
Yeah. It tells me that you probably travel. You're certainly not delivering newspapers in the morning.
Oh, I pull trailers all the time. Okay. I do. I got a lot of trailers and stuff.
All right. Do you have an exhaust brake on it?
Well, just the one when you're coming downhill.
Okay. And are you downshifting when you're pulling your trailers to come to a stop?
No.
Okay.
I used to be a truck driver, but I timed my license. But I've had people actually tell me I'm lying. So,
okay.
I just thought maybe you knew that. They did get that. I don't know what kind of brakes you usually put on it, but it's some real good ones.
I think it has 300 plus thousand miles. It has more to do with your right foot than it has anything to do with anything else. So either you're not going real fast, you're not braking real hard, you're downshifting a lot, you're using that 6.6, it's got an exhaust brake, or whatever. I can't explain it, but you might hold the world record in my world with 300,000 mile plus, but on my Dodge, I'm 88,000 miles, and I have insignificant wear. So I don't think I'm going to do more than 150 if I hit 150 on my one-ton Dodge, but I do use the exhaust brake a lot. So, and I'm on the highway a lot, and I'm hauling trailers a lot like you are, horses and tractors and excavators and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, but anyway, good luck, and I'm not going to say that you're BSing me or you're lying at 300,000 plus, because I think that's possible, and it just has everything to do with who's driving. Your wife would have never got that.
I guarantee it's possible. I've done it. So
okay. All righty. Well, Bill, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
All righty. You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about a really good auto repair shop up in the Sun City area. Automotive Dynamics is the Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive service. They're family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck the father opened up in 1982. Now Derek the son runs the operation and keeps Chuck locked out of the place because he still has old ideas, according to Derek. I'm just teasing, of course. So they've been around a long time. They're on Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. And Derek says, and he tells me and other people, I don't pay my technicians a commission on parts or labor because I don't want them ever to sell you something that would butter their own bread. Now, there's most of us that don't do that. Most of us spiff the technician because he did a good job. But that's an interesting concept, but it's a customer service context. It's in customer service context. he's making sure the customers are not going to be taken advantage and they're not going to pad your bill because they make a commission or a percent of your bill. So if you're in the Sun City area and you're looking for a nice shop, a good shop, a great shop, Auto Dynamics, Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Oh boy, 602-508-0960. We have another hour after this. We're about 4 minutes away from taking a break. And if you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Real quick, not too long ago on an air conditioning question, which we have a lot of so far today. A customer called and said they can't find the leak anywhere, so it has to be in the evaporator. And folks, the evaporator is behind the glove box, and it's the most difficult part of your air conditioning to access and replace. But it's also not visible to the naked eye. You have to figure out how to go in there and look around. And I told him that's a big mistake, because the question really be, hey, Mark, in your shop, how many evaporators do you do a year? The answer is 2. How many compressors do you do a year? The answer is 50. How many air conditioning lines do you do? More than 50. The issue is the evaporator is easy to blame because the technician can't find anywhere else where it's leaking. You're going to take a gamble that may cost you $500 to $1,000 based on his inability to find the leak and based on him saying, it's not anywhere else, so it has to be the evaporator. I want to caution you against that. Just the odds are going to be against you when you make that decision. It's not likely you're going to win. Folks, there is ways to determine if the evaporator's leaking. There's ways you can get inside that sealed case. You can take the blower motor resistor out. You can drop a camera in there. You can go to the drain. You can stick a Q-tip up the drain and look for dye. There's lots of gray-haired guys that could go in there and look and see if it was the evaporator. That doesn't extend, that kind of significant experience doesn't extend to some of the younger guys. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. They've been on my list for probably more than 10 years. They've been in Mesa for probably more than 50 years. And Brian and Thelma are probably the third, maybe the fourth generations of Vivians and Thompsons that have been in car repair in the Mesa area. So since 1970, in one place, and that's on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road, they have ASE-certified technicians. That's important. Those guys have been trained and passed tests that say they're proficient in this particular aspect of your car. So light truck repair, maintenance services, no matter what you've got, from oil changes to replacement of engines, servicing your air conditioning unit, flushing your cooling system, all of that kind of stuff is available at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Main Street, just east of Stapley. It's the only repair shop I can recommend in Mesa. I'm sure there's other good ones. But they've applied, and they've passed all my very stringent filters. And they've done a good job. And more than anything else, they're a place that when my mother was alive, she went to because they were closer than I was. So if you're interested in Mesa, then that's a great place. It's Thompson Auto Repair and Towing. 602-508-0960. If you want to climb on the phones and talk cars, you can. 602-508-0960. We'll be back talking about cars in probably about 3.5 to 4.5 minutes. One more time, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. I'm an ASE Master Tech, and I've been a Master Tech for almost 30 years. So I've been there, and I've done that. Well, good morning, everybody. This is the second hour of our car show every Saturday between 10 and 12. We're here talking about cars, and the name of the show is Under the Hood, and I've been in car repair for 39 years, and I'm here to help you with your symptoms. I'm here to help you say the right things to your shop so that they have the best opportunity to diagnose and repair your problem. I'm here to tell you what to say and what not to say, and I'm here to tell you when you hear this, it's not a good thing, and stuff like that. So if you'd like to join us or you have a question, you need to call 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. On my website, marksalem.com, I have a list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix, and this list has been going since 1988. It's a good list. There's lots of guys that have been on it for a very long time, and Kurtz Auto Repair is one of them. Kurtz is proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair facility. They were recognized as one of Better Business Bureau Ethics Award winner, and that says a whole lot. They opened their doors in 1987. Kurt, his wife, his son, and his son-in-law have been working on domestic and import gas and diesel trucks and cars. They employ ASC-certified technicians, which means your car is going to be repaired well, repaired easy, diagnosed and repaired by well-trained and certified professionals. Kurtz is I-17 and Bell Road in Phoenix, I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner. So for those of you that live up north on the I-17 corridor and even east and west on the 101, then Kurtz is real close to you. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. And we've got a caller.
That would be Alex.
Alex, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Mark, how you doing?
I'm
long good. Time listener, first time caller. I just wanted to give a shout out to Kurtz and Kelly Clark. They took care of my wife's car and my daughter's cars in just perfect fashion at a great price.
Okay, now are you talking Kelly Clark's at 12th and Glendale?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And Kelly Clark's has been around since Jesus was a baby, in case you didn't know that.
I moved down here in 78, and I remember them for forever.
Yeah. And Kelly's owned three different shops. He's recently closed one and sold one, and then he's still working the one at 12th Street in Glendale. And it's Kelly's a good guy, and then when you talk, and the other shop was Kurtz, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, and he's kind of waved his magic wand for our group many times. He's a good diagnostician. Eric and Jeff are his number one and number two people, and they're really very good. And when we have them on the air, we have a lot of fun because they're kind of younger whippersnappers, and Kurt and I are the older guard, and so we joust a lot on who's fixed the most cars, and they tease us about we were born and raised in the points and condenser era and that they were born and raised in the computer era, but it just doesn't work. So, thank you.
Yeah. Well, they did a fantastic job. I have a question about a couple of Hondas. I got a 2013 Fit with a 1.5 liter and a 2013 Civic with a 1.8 liter. They're both four bangers. I've had multiple dealerships say, hey, you're coming up around 90,000 miles, we need to adjust your valves. I really don't see anything in my user's manual about adjusting valves on either of those engines.
Okay.
Are they blowing smoke or what?
Well, in my opinion, it would be better off to ask this question. Hey, Alex, does this thing ever have a backfire, kind of a pop on acceleration or on deceleration?
No.
Is the idle quality pretty good, nice and smooth?
Rock solid, about 750, 800 RPM.
Okay. And do you ever hear any kind of an unusual clatter, like when you first start it up in the morning or after it gets good and warm? Do you ever have any engine clatter that's directly related to RPM?
I do not, no.
Okay. Well, that you just talked me out of telling you a valve adjustment, because if the intakes or the exhaust are too tight, you're going to have a backfire. And it's going to be, if the exhaust is too tight, then valve's going to be open, and it's going to blow a pop through the tailpipe. And if the intake's too tight, then it's going to pop through the intake. So I described it the very best I could. You said no. Then you talk about an idle quality, and if the valves are not adjusted properly, then your idle quality is going to suffer. And so you said it idles good from here till Timbuktu. And then clatter, if the valves are too loose, then they're going to clatter in the morning or when they get hot, and you said no. So that kind of necessitates another question is, I understand, well, first of all, I'm impressed that you looked at your owner's manual, because most guys don't even know where that's at. I'm impressed that you looked at your manual, but if your wife was in that position, I would want her to say, well, thank you for that, and would you write that down on my work order? And then, of course, put your name there and your phone number so my husband can call you if he needs to ask questions. But he's going to ask me this question. What symptom are you going to fix with this 90,000-mile valve adjustment? And I just gave them to you.
That's what I thought.
I want to tell you.
They're getting great gas mileage. I just did the serpentine on both cars.
Let me change your question slightly too, Mark. How many times do you do a valve adjustment on,
at 90,000 on a Honda?
Well, let's forget Honda. Let's just open up the door. Let's say I do 20 cars a day. That's 100 a week times 52 weeks, right?
Okay.
All right. So of all those cars, I might do a valve adjustment for a backfire or a clatter maybe 3 or 4 times a year. How many do I do with respect to maintenance? None. We don't believe in that. We don't believe that it's a good thing for anybody other than the person that gets to do your valve job under the pretext that you need it when you don't have any symptoms for it. So I'm just a little, and there's a good reason why it's not in your manual is because Honda doesn't like it there, and Honda's saying, really and truly, once you get a backfire or once you get a clatter, then you're going to take it in anyway. And if the guy puts a stethoscope on the valve cover, he's going to go, okay, I'm going to adjust your valves. So it's that simple.
Okay.
All righty.
Good to know. I was wondering why Honda was just made no mention of it. Now I think it's just the dealership looking to generate some income.
And we're not going to pick on dealerships, but I want to tell you there's three markets. There's the independent shop like my own. There's the chain stores, and there's the dealers. You only have those three options to fix your car. And all of them are well known for making up their own maintenance stopping point. A lot of them have that. I don't know if you've ever run across somebody who says that it's really important to clean your upper intake. So that's $199, and you should do that once a year. That doesn't appear in your owner's manual. It's really important to clean your fuel injectors. They'll last a lot longer. That's not in your owner's manual. It's really a good idea to change your transmission fluid at 30,000 miles. That's not in your owner's manual. So there's lots of stuff that my industry sells. Now, sometimes there's valid arguments. Sometimes an old tranny guy will say, Mark, it's just not fair for you to tell them they can go 80,000 miles on a transmission service, because time and time again, it's proven, we've proven to ourselves and our customers that if you do a 30K change, that your transmission will last longer. And my response is last longer than what? Transmissions are going to last on how they're used. So Grandma Moses, who never goes past the third throttle, is not going to have, her transmission is going to last a lot longer than a 16-year-old boy driving your Honda Civic. You have all these dynamics, but here's another thing. We have synthetic transmission fluid for the first time, and that lasts a lot longer. And I'm not opposed to taking the dipstick out and sniffing it, taking the dipstick out and wiping it on a white paper towel. And all of us gray-haired guys, we can see brown fluid. We can smell burnt fluid. Yeah, that's it. We need to do something. But if we don't have that symptom, then I don't see the sense. And I want to tell you something. There is so much work that needs to be done on cars that's really supported by symptoms that you really don't need to make up your own owner's manual. So that's my opinion. We have 20 bays, and we have 7 or 8 master techs working there. We've got 3 or 4 that have ASC certifications but haven't reached master level. And we're pretty doggone busy, and we don't have to do the we don't make up our own stopping points. It's symptom driven or it's by the book, one or the other. That's it. Okay.
Well, that's great to know, Mark. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex.
I do have an associated question.
Okay.
If you have the time.
Sure.
The owner's manuals in both Hondas call out for 0W20.
Okay.
Can I use 5W20, especially down here in Phoenix with the heat?
You can. There's a lot of people like you that are uncomfortable, and there's a lot of shops that we used 520 for years, and we still got 300 gallons of 520 in our inventory. So we're going to get rid of the 530 before we go to the 020. The lower number tells you how the oil flows cold, and the higher number tells you the viscosity it flows hot. And as you well know, we're not a Minnesota. We're not northern Idaho. We're not North Dakota. We're not Wisconsin in the wintertime. So, yes, you can fudge that, and if it makes you feel better, that's fine. In reality, zero will give you virtually the same protection as five. The difference is minuscule. Zero will flow like a liquid at 60 below zero, and a five might flow... stop flowing at 55 below zero. Something similar like that. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join the conversation. If you have something that you want to talk about, maybe you disagree with me, I'm okay with that. 602-508-0960. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. And when we come back, I want to talk about aftermarket warranties. That's really a hot button. And this morning when I was cruising through the television channels at 5 o'clock, I get up and feed the horses at 5. And then I go in. The coffee's made by then because I pushed the button on my way out. And so I was going through the channels, and there was just a whole lot of aftermarket warranties for your car and all kinds of promises. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you what it's like from my end. When you bring your car in and you have an aftermarket warranty, I'm going to tell you about the battle on my end that happens virtually every single time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. That ad just reminded me something. I think the ad said that they had done 7,900 repairs and stuff like that. So actually, Gil, I was off the grid, and I went into the computer at work, and we're now doing 191,285. That's the work order that we pulled yesterday afternoon, last work order. And our software where we kept track of this started in 1994. So we fixed 191,000. Well, we fixed 99% of the 191,000 cars that we've worked on, because I'm quite sure there's a few of them that we messed up on. So I'll give you that real quick. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good shop in Phoenix. If you're in Phoenix, it's a great place to go. They've been around since 1968. They are transmission diagnostic and repair estimates guys. They know how to diagnose them. They know how to repair them. They know how to provide estimates. They know how to be under their estimates. They know how to fix leaks. They know how to drive the car with you and have you show them what you're talking about. And Phil tells me that about a third of the time it's not a transmission-related issue. But he's good enough to know that. And he's probably good enough to tell you what part of the car is actually that is happening on. So they're on 40th Street in Washington, where they've been for a very, very long time. Automatic Transmission Exchange, right on 40th Street in Washington. If you live in Phoenix, great place to go. Dennis, you're up. What can I do for you this morning?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Quick question. I bought a new Honda ATV a couple years ago, and in the manual it was very specific on changing the oil at 100 miles, which I did. The second question, though, is I bought a brand new Ford RV with it was a motorhome with a Ford chassis, and I asked the dealer, when do I change the oil? And they said 7,500 miles. So what's the difference now on changing out oil on a brand new engine?
That's a really tough question, but I'm going to make a run at it. The idea is that on a quad, we really don't know what you're going to do on the first couple hundred or the first 30 days on an off-road vehicle. So they're saying we're going to shed a lot of metal the first couple of hard runs that you make on anything, including your motorhome. So let's not count on the filter to grab all of that. Let's go ahead and drain the oil early. And we'll get a lot of the metal out of it, and we get a fresh filter on it, and that's what I think. Now, on your Honda ATV, I bet it doesn't have a spin-on filter. It has just a screen, and you have to pull the side cover off, or the screen is near the drain plug.
No, it's got a spin-on filter.
Okay, all right.
So you're saying on the motorhome, change it as soon as possible.
No, I'm saying on the ATV, I kind of agree at the 100-hour mark that you change it.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
but
right.
On the motorhome, no, I don't agree with that. I think your motorhome, what motors it got in it? The big...
It's got the Ford V10, and I know you don't like Fords.
Let me tell you, and I've said this before, you probably have an F53 chassis. It's got four-wheel disc brakes all the way around. It's probably got that six-speed overdrive transmission. Every motorhome I've ever owned had that F53 chassis in it. It is 10 times better than the General Motors. It's 10 times better than all the rest of them for that coach. And the existing motorhome I have today has an F53 chassis, which is the Ford F53. So I love that chassis. You couldn't have picked and how long is your coach?
It's a 36.
Okay.
But it's a little longer.
Oh, no, and I'm 32, But
okay,
but mine's an old Bounder. But I'm telling you, that's the best chassis. But on the V10, I think do they call for 6,000 or 8,000 mile oil changes on your motorhome?
You know, the crazy part is I didn't get a dealer book for the engine because, you know, the chassis on the
right.
motorhome, so I didn't get the book.
Okay, well, you can go to helminc.com, helminc.com. You can order your owner's mm-hmm. manual on the internet. You can go through
okay.
a bunch of stuff and just figure something with an F53 chassis on it, which is going to be bigger than a 1 ton. So 1.5 mm-hmm. and 2 ton Fords are going to have the F53. And in reality, you might find that F53 in a 1 ton because your 36 foot, does it have a 3-axle configuration or two?
No, it's just the dualies in the back, okay. 1-axle with the dualies.
All right. Has it got 16 inch tires on it?
Got the big tires, the big Michelins, yeah.
Okay. So if it's 16-inch, then you can use a 1-ton manual. If it's bigger, if it's a 19.5 or it's a 22, then you're going to have to use something different. So it's just – but if I think you have an F53, and if that's the case, you can find a manual for that
I'm
truck in a minute.
I do. So okay. You're saying that you're not shedding any metal on those V10s early
no.
on?
No, but you have – your Honda ATV only has a quart and a half, and your V10
right.
cylinder is a much bigger oil sump. It's got a huge filter
okay.
on it. So I just don't think that you can extrapolate what we're going to do on a 1 or 2 cylinder Honda all-terrain vehicle to your V10
right.
36-foot motorhome that probably weighs close to 30,000 pounds. I think there's just a big difference there.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Dennis. Thank you. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. And we have another caller. Gil?
That would be Charlie.
Charlie, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. Thanks for your program. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Hey, I've got a 95 Ford with a 7.3 turbo diesel in it.
Okay.
And I'm thinking I'm going to have to, it's got like 380,000 on it. I'm thinking I'm going to have to be doing some injector expense. Got a question, general question about injectors. I got online, and you can get them all the way from $140 to double that price. When they rebuild them, do they rebuild the little plunger that's inside as well as the spray tip, that sort of thing, or they just rebuild the easily replaceable parts?
It,
I guess what I'm getting for is what's the best quality?
Okay. I think if you buy something from Bosch or if you buy something from some German company, I think you're better off. First of all, let me tell you this. I think you're wasting your time. That 7.3 is a monster. You could sell that truck today for what you paid for it brand new. Everybody wants that truck because of that motor. It is by far the best diesel Ford's ever made. So... And as far as injectors are concerned, I want to tell you, oil leaks are going to come before injectors. And I just don't think that you're going to, I mean, I know that you said, how many miles did you have on it?
About 380.
Okay. I know it was pretty heavy. I remember thinking to myself, wow. But I really do believe that you're going to be okay. At 380,000 miles, the truck hasn't sat a long time. You've been working it. You probably had it on the freeway a lot. So I don't think you should be worried about injectors. I think there's other things you should be worried about, more maintenance items. But to answer your question, I'd probably draw the line. If it was a Denso compressor Denso injector, I'd like it. If it was a Bosch injector, I'd like it. But I'd also call David over at Southwest Diesel. And he can give you a specific name of some other ones because they do Dodge injectors and they do the Duramax injectors. And he probably does your 7.3s as well. So talk to David over at Southwest Diesel in Phoenix. And I'm sure he can guide you a little better than I am. But really and truly, the injectors should be off your radar screen. When you have to do them, you have to do them. You can deal with it then. But you still got a long way to go.
I guess, of course, I'd bring it into you guys. I think I got one cylinder that's missing.
Okay.
A misfiring. And, of course, that could be something other than an injector. But
sure.
You guys could hook it up and tell me what it is.
Yep, we sure can. Yes, we can. We can tell you what's the matter with it. But so could David at Southwest Diesel. So if you want to try David, you can. I got to take a run. If you want to stay there, and I'll get back to you in a minute.
Feel the man.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to get to the calls real quick, but I just wanted to talk to Charlie just real quick. Charlie, you could probably diagnose that miss if you wanted to the cylinder. You go to Harbor Freight and you buy one of those temperature guns with the red button laser on it so you can pull the trigger. It's got a little screen, tells you the Fahrenheit of what you're hitting. You want to stay about 6-8 inches away from where you're at. Let it idle for some period of time and then go around and gun each one of the exhaust ports on the manifold for each one of your 8 cylinders. So where the exhaust comes out of the head and goes into the manifold, you're going to be about 6-8 inches away. You pull the trigger, the little red dot sits on the manifold, and you take the temperature of each cylinder. We did that just the other day and found a cylinder that was obviously different in temperature, so we switched to injectors, and the problem went with the injector, and so we knew we had an injector that was running lean. And that's why the cylinder was cooler, and that's the diagnostic procedure. It ain't as easy as I made it sound like, but that's the way we did it. Real quick, aftermarket warranties. Folks, I tell you right now, if you get a contract, an empty contract, I'll do your aftermarket warranty. You pay me the amount of money that you pay them, and I will abide by that contract. Every sentence, every period, every comma, and at the end of the day, I'll have more money at the end of the day than you will. Aftermarket warranties are the worst kind of companies we have to deal with because they want to send cheap parts to us. They want us to wait for the parts, which means your car is going to be out of service until they ship them to us. They don't pay for Freon or shop supplies or environmental charges or sales tax. They'll fight us tooth and nail about every part and every labor operation and insist we cut corners to reduce their responsibility, their financial responsibility. So at this particular point, we have taken the position we simply are going to avoid dealing with those kinds of cars because it takes hours to put the thing together, and inevitably, they've whittled us down 20% or more. So I don't want to be in business subsidizing your car repair. And I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for them. Otherwise, they benefit, not you. So between what I pay and you pay your deductible, then they get a better deal on the repair because they're forcing me to participate financially. So I'm not a fan of aftermarket warranties. I never have been, but that's my take on them. Let's go to the phone and talk to Dick. Dick, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, sir. How are you? Hey, guys, I talked to you some time ago. Unfortunately, it didn't work.
Okay.
Basically, I've got a 1994 Ford F-250 with a big 460 engine in it. I can take, and when I start it up, the engine just races something fierce, and I can take my foot off the gas. I constantly have to ride the brake because, you know, I'm trying to get it to slow down and either put it in a lower gear or, you know, I can take my foot off the gas and it'll run almost 40 miles an hour.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a whole bunch of things that could be wrong. Has anybody put a screwdriver on any of the adjustments on that fuel-injected motor?
I took it over to where you told me, and they did a bunch. He said that there wasn't too much they could do.
Okay.
And it doesn't run any different than it did.
Okay.
So,
well, what did you pay them?
Huh?
What did you pay them?
$250.
Okay. I think you need to go back to them. I would say the same thing about my shop. I think you need to go back and say,
2 minutes.
In a nice way, you know, that we didn't make any progress, and it's still the same way it was. And I would like you to get the opportunity to take a look at this again and see if you can fix it. And if you can't, then let's sit down and talk about some kind of refund so I can take it somewhere else. But I would really like to give you the second chance. But I also want you to know that you have to call me for any additional funds whatsoever. And so, and leave your car and your keys there. It could be a vacuum leak. The EGR valve can stuck open. The PCV valve line could have a split in it. Vacuum leaks will raise the idle on a fuel-injected motor. And it could be a mass airflow sensor problem. There's a lot of problems, but to be perfectly honest with you, on a 1 to 10 scale, this might be a 5 or a 6, with 10 being the worst that we have to go. So if you do, and I don't care if it's a shop that I referred you to, I don't care who it is. Did you pay with a credit card?
One time I did, the second time I paid cash.
Okay. All right. And so it's been in there twice for the same thing?
Well, they were just two different times. Yeah,
okay.
Same thing.
Okay. Well, I think you just need to go back, and if not, then email me, and I'm going to send you to somebody. What part of town do you live in?
East Side.
Okay.
About 32nd Street in Camelback.
Okay, well, I would send you to Martin's Auto, 16th Street, just right around Osborne. I'd send you to 25th Street Auto, Billy over there. So between the Martin boy and Billy, those two guys, there'd be no question that one of them could pick this off. And what about Kelly Clark at 12th and Glendale? Is that a possibility?
Okay, I'll mark it down.
Okay, any one of those three guys, I would bet $100 that all three of those guys could find and fix this issue. So try them and see what happens. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Dick. Thank you very much, Fred. I'm going to put you on hold for just a second, and Jim too, because I'm up against a break, and it's my fault. It's not yours. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and just like I promised, we're going to go right back to Fred. Thank you very much for holding through the break. What can I do for you, Fred?
Hey, Mark. I appreciate your honesty, your candor, and, well, most of all, your honesty and knowledge. I've got an 05 Buick LaCrosse. None of my dash instruments work. Turn signals work, but they don't indicate on the dash. No dome lights. Checked all the fuses. Any speculation on what I might be needing to look for?
Now, when you checked the fuses, did you use like a digital volt ohm meter to check both sides, or did you use a little 12 volt test light ice pick, or what'd you use?
No, I just looked at the to make sure the element wasn't burned through.
Okay, so you pulled them all out and looked at them.
Right.
Okay. I'd be interested in knowing if you have tail lights. So tonight or this evening when it gets a little dark, I want you to go outside. I want you to put the parking brake on. I want you to start it up like normal. I want you to put it in drive and take your foot off the gas, and because you have the parking brake on, it's not going to go anywhere. And mm-hmm. And then have your wife or somebody look at the taillights, not brake lights, but taillights, because most of the time, if you lose your dash lights, you lose your taillight fuse. And it's usually because there's a short in one of the taillight sockets. And that a lot of people don't know that when you lose your dash lights, that you lost your taillights, and vice versa. So you'd see a car driving down the road with no taillights, there's a 99% chance that they don't have any dash lights either. And it's kind of an old-fashioned way to let the driver know that something is wrong.
But I got no instruments either, Mark.
Okay. Well, I don't
Same
know.
Thing?
Well, that's certainly the first place that you got to go. The second place is there's a variety of companies that do digital dash work. And there are problems with those. What you want to do is you want to get on the internet or call your garage and ask them if they have somebody here locally. The two guys that are here in town are both really good guys, but they don't do dashboards for people. They only do it for shops. And the responsibility of the shop is to diagnose it, make sure that it's not a bad connection at the back of the circuit board, and make sure that all the fuses, all the circuit breakers, every circuit on that thing is alive. Then you pull the dash panel and send it out. So every once in a while, they'll let you bring the whole car down, but most of the time they don't. So it's going to be something that's going to be a bad connection, or it's going to be a fuse, circuit breaker, or the like. Or it's going to be your rheostat that brings the light up or down, could be defective. And so if it's not passing the light through, or if it's a bad switch, then it will show dark, but it's really just because the rheostat's bad.
Okay.
And so really and truly the checkout on that is probably, I'm going to guess at $50 to $75 before somebody's going to know what needs to be done. So it's not going to be that big of a deal, but I'm just guessing, so I want you to know that. Do you have a garage that you patronize?
I usually go to McKay's out in Mesa.
Okay. Well,
AJ McKay's.
If you've had good luck with them, I would be the last person in the world to suggest you change the horses in the middle of the stream at this point. I think I'd start the conversation with, are you comfortable with working on this kind of a situation? Some shops might say no. And then if you, the second part of that question is, well, if I was your father and you loved my your father, where would you send me? And that would be an important consideration as well. So all of us have run across
that digital, if it's that digital, is that an expensive proposition or?
Well, sometimes it is. And expensive means this. It might take $200 or $300 to get the dash out, and it might take $300 or $400 or $500 to get it fixed. That's that's a worst-case scenario. That's worst-case scenario. But let me change your question. Mark, how many times do you pull in digital dashes and have them work? Maybe once a year. Yeah, this isn't a big problem. And sometimes maybe we have three a year and we're able to find the bad connection and fix it and send them out the door. Every once in a while, General Motors has some stepper motor issues, and that's something that typically has to be handled by somebody who's very proficient in the dashboard repair.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay, pal. Thanks.
All right, you betcha. Thank you very much for calling. Talking about good repair shops, Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. Bob handles the shop. Ellen, his wife, handles the front counter. And it's been said that she knows more about cars than Bob does, but she writes up the work orders. She knows what questions to ask. She knows how to interpret your answer. So you get the best of both worlds. If you have a car that nobody else can fix, then you might have to drive to 38th Avenue in Indian School and go to Harker's. Bob is really good at what he does. He's probably one of the best diagnosticians in the entire valley. If he's probably in the top five, and I'm not quite sure I'm even in the top five, but I know he is. So if you have an oil change or maintenance, 38th Avenue in his school, you can go there. He can do brake jobs. He can do all that kind of stuff. But if you've got a situation where every time you get in the car and buckle your seatbelt and the radio clucks like a chicken, Bob can fix that. That's the kind of stuff that he is really good at. Or you get in the car, you turn the car on, and the wipers flap for no reason. Or the visors open and close for no reason. And I'm being just stupid here. Bob can fix all those kinds of weird things. Okay, we talked about a little bit about what you put in your gas tank and what you don't. And those of us with diesels, we already know that it's very easy for our family, our kids, or our wife to just get in the habit of grabbing the gasoline nozzle and filling up your diesel engine or your diesel tank with fuel, with gasoline. All's not lost in that situation. Most of the time, the repair is about a third of what you think it might be. If you put gas in your diesel, like my son has in his twice, I've been blessed because I've never done that. But if you do that, you'll figure it out pretty quick. And at that particular point, it's necessary to tow it to a shop. 9 out of 10 times that happens, we simply just remove the contents of the fuel tank. We replace the fuel filter. We get it running. We get it out on the freeway. We get the gas all the way through the system and out the tailpipe, and the car is fine. Whether it's Ford, whether it's Chevrolet, the 6.6, whether it's the Cummins 5.9 or the 6.7, and all three of the four of the Ford motors, they're all the same. Don't forget this. In the old days with diesel engines, when the fuel used to gel, the guys that were stuck up in the northern part of the United States when it was below zero temperatures, they would use gasoline to thin their diesel engines. So gasoline in and of itself in a diesel engine in a small portion, like 10% of the diesel fuel, is not going to cause any harm. And when it gets to be about 30 or 40 or 50% of the fuel in the tank, it's not going to run because diesels and gasoline is going to mix together, and that's going to have a substantial effect on the power and the performance of your diesel. You'll know something's wrong. So keep an eye on the right nozzle. Keep an eye on the right hose. And it should be a green hose and a green nozzle. But if you put gas in your diesel, the world's not come to an end. Not too long ago, there was a friend of mine up in Payson that accidentally did that. And we sent it over to a diesel shop in Payson called Enhanced. And I think he did everything for $360 and put the truck back on the road. So, and there's going to be an environmental charge because somebody has to get rid of the 40 or 50 or 60 gallons of diesel and gasoline, you know, cocktail. So, and that we usually have to sell that or pay someone to take that off of our property in 55 gallon drums. So there's likely to be an environmental fee. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're about 5 minutes from the end of the show, so if you wanted to call in now, you could, and we could still get to you. 602-508-0960. And I think we have Gerald. Is that right?
Gerard,
I'm sorry. Gerard, how can I help you this morning?
Okay, I know you've talked about this before. This is dealing with coolants.
Okay.
Okay, and I had called you before on my Chrysler Crossfire.
Okay.
Last time the solution was changed when they replaced my motor after it got flooded, and I'm sure Chrysler puts in the proper stuff. According to the book, it says it's the GO5 fluid, and that's what I talked to my son. He's in Yuma, and he's arguing with me because AutoZone's telling him one thing. And my book, my maintenance book, tells me another thing. So
okay.
I told him to use a GO5.
Okay.
And is that going to be any problem with the solution that's already in the car that came from Chrysler?
Well, he can use either one if he wants. If you use a universal coolant, the universal coolant usually mixes with whatever you're adding to it, whether it's blue or yellow or green or red or pink. Whatever it happens to be, it. How many miles has the car got on it that we're talking about?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay, is it more than 100?
No, it's not. It's not 100,000.
Okay, because see, anywhere between 75 and 100, I would think that you just want to flush it all out and start over again. That's not that hard to do.
Well, he just needs to add a small amount because we had to replace the reservoir because the nipple broke off again.
Okay.
And can't build up pressure.
In that case, I mean, are you thinking about 3 or 4 cups of something?
Yeah, whatever fills up the reservoir, basically.
Okay, well, in Yuma, it doesn't drop below zero very often over there, so I'm not real worried about freezing up anything. To be perfectly honest with you, I would tell my son to put 3 or 4 cups of distilled water in it and be done with it. I think that's not going to dilute your protection. A 50-50 mix protects you to 44 below zero or something like that. So if it dilutes your protection from 40 below zero to 30 below zero, do we really care in Yuma, Arizona?
Yeah, I know.
So,
but if the GO5 on the container says do not add water, so.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Every coolant can be mixed at 50-50. If you're looking at the container, then what you're doing is you're looking at a container that's already half water and half coolant. So that's a poor kind of container. It's just poured into the car and you're fine.
Right.
I don't buy diluted coolant because I'm paying coolant prices for half of the water.
Right.
There's two quarts in there.
So if
he has a diluted one, then he doesn't have to worry about it. And if he's got a GL5, have him dump it into the coolant recovery. That's no big deal. If he doesn't have a GL5 and he wants to use a universal, have him buy something that's amber in color. It's going to come undiluted and diluted. I'd probably buy the diluted if I were him because he's not going to use that much. And just top it off.
Right.
And I would bring it up to the middle of the res. Forget the hot and cold mark. Fill it up on a cold morning. Before it's been run, fill it up to the middle mark between the hot and the cold and with the amber coolant. Just be done with it.
Oh, okay. Because I noticed the GO5 on the one that I've got here does not say if it's diluted or otherwise. It just...
It's just a matter of marketing. They make the same coolant, but it comes diluted, half water, half coolant, for those that don't want to mix it. For those that don't have a 5-gallon bucket to put the undiluted in there and put a gallon of water in there, people want the convenience of that's already diluted with water. So it's the same coolant. It's just a matter of it's one needs to be cut with water and one doesn't need to be cut with water. It's the same coolant.
Okay.
So anyway, thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it. Thank you. Alrighty, my email is mark@marksalem.com. Mark is with a K, and Salem spells like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. So if you ever want to get with me, send me your email and give me the year, make, and model of your car and the miles, and then let's talk symptoms. If you'd include your phone number, I'd like that, because a lot of times I just don't want to spend a whole lot of time going back and forth asking questions. I'd just as soon talk to you, and I'm happy to call you. I'm going to call from a block number, so give me a... and if you want, tell me what's a good time to call. I can't always hit those marks, but I'll do my best. The bottom line on car repair has to do with finding a good shop. And S&S Tire is a good shop for those of you in the Northwest Valley. They have shops in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They've been around a very long time. They're in their second generation of young men. So they opened up in 1976. The two, Dan and his brother, have taken over, Tan and Rob, have taken over the business from their father in the last 3 years. And they all give the same high level of service. So S&S Tire will balance your tires. They do alignments and suspension, but they also do oil changes and all the other stuff that goes along with tires and normal maintenance. So if you're on the west side, again, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, there's an S&S Tire. It'd be a great place. If you don't already have a shop, it'd be a great place to try. I promise you, they'll take good care of you. Until next week, please wear your seatbelt. Please wear your seatbelt, because you have no idea how much it's going to hurt when you hit the dashboard at 50 miles an hour. I'm Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 till noon right here on KKNT, we talk about cars.